Good afternoon. I call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is Tuesday afternoon, April 5th, 2022, and the time is 1 p.m. Please silence all cell phones. Present today are Senators Hoffman, Senator Wilson will be along shortly, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Olson, Senator Von Imhoff, and Co-Chair Stedman, myself, Senator Bishop, Chair. We have Laura and Jake on the moderators this morning, or for this afternoon. Senate Bill 239 approved PetroStar Incorporated Royalties Oil Sale Contract, and SB 240 approved the Marathon Petroleum Royalty Oil Sale. So first up, this will be the first hearing for both SB 239 and 240. We've seen a lot of these at this table in our tenure here. And some of us have got 20 years plus and some 30. So our intention is to hear the bill introduction and presentation. So today for the bill introduction is Johnny Meza, commercial analyst with DNR. Please come forward, sir. Put yourself on the record. And you also have Adi Shabol, commercial analyst, I think, for Lifeline. And John Crother, deputy commissioner, DNR. So, good afternoon, sir, and put yourself on the record and walk us through these eight slides, please.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Johnny Meza. I work in the commercial section of the Division of Oil and Gas, Department of Natural Resources. We have prepared a presentation summarizing the royalty in-kind contracts for the sale of royalty oil from the North Slope to the in-state refineries, Marathon and PetroStar. This has been a close to 8 month period where the department has carefully followed the language of the regulations and the statutes governing the process for the sale of royalty oil from the North Slope. Following those regulatory and statutory requirements, we maintain this process open to the public, involving the royalty, what we call the royalty board, and also allowing comments from the public through our publication of our preliminary best interest finding. That's a brief summary of the process that we followed, and we can proceed with the first slide of our presentation. And in this presentation, we're going to focus on the contract terms for these proposed contracts for Marathon and PetroStar. On the first slide, you see a table listing the two currently proposed contracts at the bottom, Marathon for 2022 and PetroStar for 2022, but also the most recent ones that the state has entered since 2016. On the second column, you can see the duration of those contracts, beginning with 5 year periods and 4 years as well, some of them lasting 1 year, and the most recently proposed ones for 3 years and 5 years. This is important because the statutory language determines that for every long-term contract that the department enters for the sale of royalty oil, it must go before it must look for the approval of the legislature before the DNR commissioner can execute those contracts. There is an exception if those contracts last 1 year and are entered for the purpose of relieving storage or market conditions, and that's what the DNR did for those 1 year contracts that you see in that table.
Senator Wilikowski has a question.
Thank you. Looks like the Tesoro RIK contract expired in last July, and I'm just curious, do you know where they're getting their oil from these days?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, in the best interest findings that we published, we detail how much oil the Kenai refinery obtains from the North Slope and Coquimbo combined. I think it's about 80%. 20% they obtain it from a mix between foreign sources of crude oil, but also from the lower 48.
Follow up.
So it seems odd. Is there a reason that they don't use 100% from Alaska, number one? And number two, do you know the source of their foreign oil?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, the department, when offering its royalty oil, we publish a what we call a solicitation of interest, where we try to gauge the demand that refineries have for royalty oil. From our standpoint, we would want to sell as much royalty oil in kind as we can. Our oil is also subject to competitive forces, so the refineries compare what prices they can obtain from the state versus what other sources such as the North Slope, Cook Inlet, and foreign sources of crude. I believe the Kenai refinery, when they obtained that 20% from lower 48 or foreign sources of crude, they do it on a not on a long-term basis, but sporadically. So, to go back to your question specifically, we do not know the specific regions from they obtain foreign crude.
So, you don't know whether they're getting their oil right to 20% offshore oil? Is it offshore the continental United States, or is it offshore from Eastern Europe or Indonesia? We don't know.
Chair, not precisely. We have not asked that particular question.
Senator Wilikowski, follow up?
Oh, I sort of the same question. Do you know if they get any from Russia?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I do not know.
We'll find out. Please continue.
Thank you. So moving on with the description of this table, on the third column, you can see the royalty barrels that are for sale throughout these contracts. You can see that at the beginning in this table, some of those older contracts have sold royalty barrels around 20,000 to 25,000 barrels per day, and that throughout this period has been declining, and that may be a reflection on the particular demand profile of these refineries for royalty oil and the competitiveness of royalty oil compared to other possibilities that these refineries have. The currently proposed contracts are for the sale of 10,000 to 15,000 barrels per day for Marathon, and for PetroStar, 12,500 barrels per day for the first 3 years, and between 10,000 and 12,500 barrels per day for the remaining 3 years. The next column in that table shows the way that DNR and these buyers of royalty oil have agreed in determining the value of royalty oil in kind at the field. Because DNR sells its royalty oil at the field, we need to start from the valuation process from the place where that oil is determined on a more transparent way, which is the U.S. West Coast. From that point, we use other deductions corresponding to the transportation cost of pipelines and other adjustments for quality and line losses. But one element that is important in this valuation methodology is what we call the RIK differential, or royalty oil in kind differential. In sum, what we do is a netback methodology, because the price of oil is determined in the U.S. West Coast, and that's how we, both parties, have agreed to arrive at the value of royalty oil in kind at the field. The next slide will provide a more detailed comparison of that valuation methodology. Lastly, that column presents information on this precise key term, the RIK differential, which is the term that buyers, refiners, and the state negotiate for determining the value of this royalty oil in kind. You can see that in the contracts for 2016, that value was $1.95 per barrel, and that has increased to $2.23 per barrel for Marathon and $2.25 per barrel for PetroStar.
Seeing no questions, next slide.
Thank you. As I said just now, this slide will provide a graphical comparison of how the value of royalty oil is determined when the department selects its royalty oil to be in value versus when we select the royalty oil to be sold in kind. On the left side, you see a graphical representation for royalty in value. Most of the oil that we produce in the North Slope is sold in the U.S. West Coast. As part of the evaluation, when the state takes its royalty oil in value, we take a share of the proceeds that the lessees obtain, subject to some fair market evaluation. As part of that, we begin assessing the value of royalty oil at the field, beginning with how that price is assessed at the main market for ANS, the U.S. West Coast, and we deduct from there the marine transportation cost and all other costs associated with the transportation via pipelines and adjustments for the different quality of the fields from which ANS is obtained. In doing so, we arrive at this step number four, what we call the price of royalty oil in value for this hypothetical field one. You can see numbers associated to this illustrative example, where the price of ANS is at $80 per barrel, the marine costs at $3.50, all other costs related to pipelines and adjustments for quality at $6 per barrel, thereby producing a royalty in value oil price at $70.50. In comparison to this, which to this royalty in value, is how we price royalty oil in kind. We follow the similar netback methodology, but this oil is no longer physically transported to the U.S. West Coast. However, we still follow the netback valuation methodology, and in substitution for this marine transportation allowance, we use the what we call the RIK differential. So you can see that for this example, we keep all other elements at the same level, at the same value, with the exception of the RIK differential. And that comparison between the RIK differential and the marine transportation allowance is what derives the premium that the state obtains when selling its royalty oil in kind. You can see that in the value of royalty oil in kind at the top right at $71.75 per barrel. I think that is $1.25 per barrel premium when we sell our royalty oil in kind.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Just looking at the previous slide, it looks like the total that we're putting out for RIK is between 20 and 30,000 per day. And I'm just curious what the total amount that is available, total barrels are would be available.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, the total royalty that DNR expects to obtain from North Slope production is a range between 40,000 barrels per day and 70,000 barrels per day. That naturally depends on the production forecast that we expect from the North Slope, but also the different royalty rates that we have in our leases.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
And then, well, a couple questions. Is there a public bidding process for RIK oil?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair. As I mentioned earlier, what DNR does is we publish a solicitation of interest because, as you mentioned, the statutory language is that the default for this type of royalty oil in kind sales should be done via competitive basis. And in that solicitation of interest, we invite responses by market participants in our royalty oil. And in this process, in this iteration, we only obtain two responses showing interest in buying royalty oil.
Follow up, Senator.
Yeah, thank you. And so so Marathon and Petrostar were the only two that requested a bid?
Let's Senator Wilikowski, through HR, yes.
And if I could, and is that the amount that they requested between, I'm just roughing here, 10, looks like 10 and, well, Marathon 10 to 15 and Petrostar 12, 5 to 10?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, their initial requirements vary slightly. Through the negotiation process, DNR was able to have one of these buyers increase the demand for royalty oil.
Could you repeat that?
Through the negotiation process, DNR was able to obtain higher volumes of sales of royalty oil for one of the buyers.
Thank you. Follow up?
So then it looks like we've got another between 20, well, since you said we had 40K to 70K total, so it looks like we have anywhere from 20 to 40,000 additional barrels, and I assume that'll just be sold RAV down the pipeline.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that's correct. Unless we do, submit a solicitation of interest for a second time and see another interest, the default will be royalty in value.
Okay.
Senator.
Yeah, and then. So this will be, I assume, the max amount of oil that will be needed by Petrostar and Marathon?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, the maximum that they would need from the state. They also procure North Slope oil and cooking oil.
And then I think one last one, Mr. Chair. And then do we know where Tesoro, so you said they used to get 80% from the state, now zero? Are they getting, how are they replacing that? Are they getting a cheaper deal, a better deal from the producers directly? Are they getting it overseas or from California? What are they doing to replace that?
Senator Wadakowski, through the chair. I think what I mentioned was that Tesoro, the Kenai refinery, which is now operated by Marathon, they obtain 80% of their crude needs from a combination of North Slope producers and Cook Kingdom producers, private producers, and all included in that mix is also the royalty oil from the state.
And I believe under invited testimony, we can ask Marathon directly, Senator. Are we done with this page? Please continue.
Thank you. On this slide, we provide historical information on the main comparison that we were trying to highlight on previous slides, which is the comparison between the marine transportation cost in the blue line in that graph versus the gray line in that graph, which is the weighted average value of this negotiated term in the RIK or royalty in kind contracts that we call the RIK differential. The vertical distance between that blue line and the gray line represents the premium that DNR obtains by selling its royalty oil in kind versus receiving it in value. Again, a share of the proceeds from the producers. There is also a dashed line in that graph representing what the Department of Revenue publishes every year called the weighted average location differential. What that means is just another deduction that third parties use when selling Alaska North Slope oil within the state. Because at that point in the sale, that oil is not physically moved outside of Alaska. They do not subtract the marine transportation cost. They just have another deduction, which is called the location differential. The purpose of having that in the graph is to indicate or to have an indication of where the market is going for the sales of ANS oil within the state. As you can see, that has been trending upwards, and the contracts that the state has arrived and that has been shown in the previous table reflects partially that adjustment to the market by having a higher value of the RIK differential. So from the perspective of the royalty in kind buyer and the royalty oil that DNR sells, they need, from their perspective, they try to have that as to be as competitive as other sources of crude oil that they could obtain.
And what you just said was, correct me if I'm wrong, the weighted average on the DOR location differential, looking at the slide, because of the increased production, we have more RIK oil to sell on the market, to offer.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. If there's more oil in the pipeline, that would lower the tariff for everyone, which means the state gets more tax revenue. And I'm just curious if that has been taken into account and factoring out whether the state's making more money on this. Because if you put 20,000 or 30,000 more barrels of oil per day in the pipeline, that would lower the tariff, right? So is that accounted for?
Senator Wadakowski, through the chair, yes. The relationship that you highlight is correct. As more throughput we have in taps, the per barrel transportation cost will be lower, and the total proceeds from this sale of royalty oil in kind will be greater. We not only focus on the total proceeds by selling of royalty oil in kind, but also on the additional revenue that we obtain by not selling a royalty oil in value. So we focus on both the total proceeds and the incremental revenue.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this subject comes up every several years. And could you highlight kind of quickly what the difference between the current proposal for the royalty in kind today versus the previous times we've approved it? Is there anything that we should be paying a special attention to?
Senator Stedman, through the chair, if we go back to the table that we showed at the beginning, one of the purposes of this table is to precisely answer this type of question, which is comparing the current terms of the proposed contracts versus the ones that we obtained in the past. One main difference that you see in this slide is precisely the value of the RIK differential, which has increased. from $1.95 to $2.23.25. What essentially that means is a further reduction in the value of royalty oil by approximately 30-something cents. The slide that followed that table showed evidence as to why we believe that increasing that deduction still corresponds to what the market is assessing currently by the value of the Department of Revenue location differential, which shows an upward trend, but also still allowing us to obtain this incremental revenue versus our other option, which is royalty oil in value. Future slides will keep showing more comparisons in the contract terms with respect to previous contracts.
Please continue.
Thank you. So we continue with the table showing the comparison of these contract terms, and now besides price, we are going to focus on other contract provisions now related to the flexibility that this contract between the state and the refineries provide to both the buyer and the seller. So throughout these contracts beginning in 2016, the RIK buyer, the refiner in Alaska, obtains significant flexibility that perhaps they may not be able to obtain through other contracts from third parties, but from private suppliers. One of these provisions is that the refinery can nominate or ask for zero, so for no barrels, for up to 2 consecutive months or for 3 months if they use the what we call the turnaround clause, which is something that they use if they, for example, have a scheduled maintenance of their facilities, and therefore they may not have a need to buy royalty oil in kind. They could also request a permanent reduction of these nominations of royalty oil, subject to the approval of the DNR commissioner. They may temporarily reduce this royalty oil under force majeure event, and if they could also request, subject to the approval of the DNR commissioner, an increment in their purchases of royalty oil. Something that is particular to the case of Marathon this time around is that this refinery could temporarily reduce its nominations before what was agreed. However, they must meet a minimal amount that should be bought.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry.
And so I assume if there's a period of time where the no barrels are nominated, that just simply gets shipped down the pipeline and sold REV?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, that's correct.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Thank you. And we just showed that this contract provides flexibility to the buyer, but also it provides flexibility to the seller, in this case, the state. How so? If for some reason the producers, their expectation for production is lower, then naturally the amount of royalty oil available will be lower than expected, and therefore the department or the state in general is not harmed by committing to or guaranteeing any amount. So in this case, the department has this provision where it can limit its delivery of royalty oil up to 95% of total royalty oil from the North Slope. There is no guarantee related to quantity, quality, or the source of royalty oil to these buyers. They will take whatever the state receives in form of royalty. And if there is excess royalty to be offered and the buyers have a demand for that, the contract would allow for that incremental sale of royalty oil. So it provides both flexibility for the buyer and for the seller, in this case, the state.
Senator Wilikowski?
On the REV oil, who markets that? And is there a fee that the state pays?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, no, the state doesn't pay any fee. We look at the contracts that the producers enter into by selling its equity production of North Slope oil. And we receive the proceeds subject to other provisions in the oil and gas lease contract that allow for the state to arrive at a fair market valuation of that royalty oil.
Follow-up, Senator?
Has there been any sort of look back to see how our sales prices compare to the major producers? Are we getting the same price, doing a little better, worse? Any sense?
Senator Bielikowski, through the chair, yes, we do perform that exercise. I believe in the preliminary best in the final best interest finding, we provide a chart that shows how much more revenue the state has obtained by selling its royalty oil in kind versus the other alternative, receiving the proceeds from the producers in value. On average, we received a premium of 93 cents for each barrel of royalty oil in kind that we sold.
Follow-up, Senator?
I'm curious how we compare to the producers, because they have their oil going down the pipeline and they're selling it to their customers. And I'm curious how our sales compare. Are you saying we have a 93 cent premium compared to the producers?
Yes, Senator Bielikowski, through the chair. The 93 cents is a comparison of the price of royalty oil that the state obtains by selling to via its in contracts with for royalty oil in kind versus what the state would receive from lessees or producers as proceeds from their contracts by the sale of their own equity oil.
Follow up?
That's really good. That's kind of makes me wonder why the, how is it possible that the state is getting such a higher premium than the oil industry? That's their business.
Senator Bielikowski, through the chair, is mainly due to the fact that that oil is not being transported to the U.S. West Coast, and therefore there is no such deduction for marine transportation. In place of that deduction, we have this negotiated deduction that we call the RIK differential, which, as we saw in the graph, is much lower than that marine transportation cost.
Please continue.
Thank you. Continuing with the comparison of the contracts, we now focus on the financial assurance side of the contract. As any agreement between buyer and seller, there is a possibility of the risk of default by the buyer, and this is another area where the state pays attention to. In this case, not only we have a contract with the buyer, the refinery, but also their parent company or guarantor. In these provisions, the guarantor offers the state one of three options: the letter of credit, a surety bond, or an opinion letter by a financial analyst attesting to the quality of the guarantor. With respect to how we calculate the amount that is provided as financial assurance, that has varied for the Kenai refinery when we was operated by Tesoro, and for the North Pole and Valdez refineries operated by PetroStar. For one, is the amount is calculated at 90 days worth of royalty oil, and for the other is 50 days worth of royalty oil, and that has been an outcome of the negotiations that DNR has conducted with these refineries. There is also a retroactivity provision, because once the invoice is sent to the buyer calculating the value of royalty oil and the amount to be paid, once that is done, there could be further changes in the future of some of the elements in that calculation, and both the buyer and the seller have the ability to request a recalculation based on new information, such as FERC-mandated revisions of the tariff or TAPS, or some quality adjustments for that oil, or some measurement of the oil that was delivered. There is an 8-year period that allows for such readjustment, even if the contract is terminated before that 8-year period ends. Lastly, there are other provisions encouraging the buyer to use commercially reasonable efforts to manufacture the refined products from that royalty oil inside of Alaska. As stated in the final best interest finding, these refineries primarily provide refined products to Alaska, and only a minor portion of their production goes to, I believe, Canada or the Pacific Northwest. There's another provision encouraging the employment of Alaska residents to the extent that they are willing and qualified as other candidates.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Do you know how many Alaska residents are hired by Marathon and PetroStar, and what percentage Alaska hire that is?
Senator Wielichowski, through the chair, we do know, if I'm allowed to ask my colleagues on the line, they will have that precise number for you.
Who would you like that referred to, Mr. Meza?
I would like to start with Artie Chobal and then with Chalinda Werasinghe.
Okay. You'll have to excuse me. Adi Chobal, commercial analyst in Anchorage, Department of Natural Resources. Did you hear the question from Senator Wielichowski?
Yes, I did, Chairman Bishop.
And if you could answer that, it would be appreciated.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Yes, Marathon reports for their Kenai refinery, 220 full-time employees and 60 contractors. And then they also reported that they have an additional 40 employees at terminals in Anchorage and North Pole.
Mm-hmm. And they're... And their Alaska hire percentage?
They, Senator Bishop, they didn't report, you know, specifically an Alaska hire percentage from the in their responses to our questions. They just reported the number of Alaska employees.
Okay. Well, we'll ask Marathon when they're online, and maybe if you could follow up with a written percentage estimate to the committee, and please put yourself on the record for the Senate records.
Yes, sir. This is Audie Chobal, commercial analyst, Division of Oil and Gas at the Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Senator Wielichowski.
Yeah, do you have that same information for PetroStar?
If I could speak, my colleague Chalinda Werasinghe would know that information.
Shalinda, could you answer Senator Wielichowski's question after you put yourself on the record, please?
Sure. Thank you, Chairman. My name is Chalinda Werasinghe. I'm a commercial analyst with the Division of Oil and Gas, DNR. And Senator Bishop, through the chair, for PetroStar, they have 80 full-time high-paying positions at their refineries, in both refineries. And they employ 275 positions company-wide. And as far as the refineries are concerned, they are 100% staffed with residents in Alaska, and 99% of the entire company is staffed with residents in Alaska.
Thank you for that. Senator Wielichowski, we're good?
Yeah, excellent.
Excellent, yep. Please continue.
Thank you. This is the last slide reflecting the other important element of this contract for the state, which is the additional revenue that the state will obtain. Beginning with the contract in 2016, the actual incremental revenue that the state obtained from that contract was $31 million. In other words, had the state sold these 20 to 25,000 barrels per day, I'm sorry, had the state received these barrels in value, we wouldn't have obtained that $31 million. The incremental revenue for PetroStar in 2016 was $23 million. For the following one-year contracts, we only have a few months' worth of data. Those contracts haven't yet expired. We have $3 million for Marathon and $700,000 for PetroStar. And we estimate that for the currently proposed multi-year contracts with Marathon, we could obtain a range between $3 and $14 million. And for PetroStar, a range between $17 and $19 million of incremental revenue.
Senator Wielichowski.
Thank you. We've had many disputes over the years over the tariff costs with the producers, and I'm just curious if we've had similar legal disputes or other disputes over what the RIK should be.
Senator Wielichowski, through the chair, as far as I recall, I have not seen any legal disputes with our buyers of royalty oil in kind.
Thank you. Mr. Meza?
And I believe that concludes our presentation.
Thank you. Brief, please. Okay, back on the record. We're going to open Senator Wilikowski. I apologize. Do you have a question?
Yeah, just a request. If we could get, to the extent they're public, I assume they are, copies of the bid packet that was put out, copies of the best interest finding, and a copy of the contracts that were actually approving. I know it says it's attached. I don't see a copy here. And then, was there any dissenting votes on the royalty board in approving these?
Senator Bulakowski, the best interest findings and responses to the solicitation of interest and the proposed contracts are all public, but we will provide those to you directly. And to your second question, there were not dissenting votes. They were all unanimous recommendation for approval.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, at this point, we're going to take public testimony on 239, so we're opening public testimony. Mr. Chapados, are you online, sir?
Yes, sir, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, if you could give us your public testimony on 239, please.
I will. Thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Doug Chapados, and I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of PetroStar Incorporated. I am testifying today in support of PetroStar's proposed five-year royalty oil contract, which is now before this committee. By way of background, PetroStar is a wholly owned subsidiary of Arctic Slope Regional Corporation, and thus the state's only Alaskan-owned refiner. In addition to fuel distribution terminals located in Anchorage, Valdez, Kodiak, Dutch Harbor, and Interior Alaska, PetroStar also operates two of the state's three commercial refineries, one in North Pole and the second in Valdez, both of which draw crude oil directly from the Trans-Alaska pipeline system. In fact, TAPS is PetroStar's only source of crude oil supply, which means that contracts such as the one before you now are absolutely essential to PetroStar's continued operation. From this crude oil, PetroStar produces a variety of products, including jet fuel for commercial airlines, as well as over 90% of the jet fuel consumed at the Department of Defense and U.S. Coast Guard installations located across the state, heating oil for residential and commercial customers, ultra-low sulfur diesel fuels for both on- and off-road uses, including marine diesel fuels, asphalt oil for road paving projects, and specialty low-sulfur turbine fuels for the exclusive use of Golden Valley and Copper Valley Electric Associations. As previously testified to by DNR staff and as explained in the best interest finding, this contract is good for the state in terms of maximizing the revenues generated from Alaska's royalty oil share. It also benefits Alaskans by helping to maintain the in-state petroleum refining industry and thus preserves competition within the state's fuels market. It is for these reasons that I encourage the committee to approve this royalty oil contract. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my statement. I appreciate this opportunity to address the committee, and I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chapados. Questions from committee? I believe congratulations are in order, though, with your Alaska hire numbers.
Well, so thank you. We have approximately 275 employees, Mr. Chair, and of those, all but two are located here in the state of Alaska.
Thank you for that. I'm getting thumbs up around the table, so appreciate it. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chapados. Is anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, this closes the public testimony on 239. Now we're going to open the public testimony on 240, and that is the Marathon Royalty Oil contract, and I believe we have online Mr. No, let's see, 240, 246. Let me get there. Excuse me, it's the operator, it's not the Mr. Casey Sullivan with Marathon Petroleum. Are you online, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Casey Sullivan. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. And if you put yourself on the record and provide us with your testimony.
Very good. Thank you. For the record, this is Casey Sullivan. I'm the Government and Public Affairs Manager for Marathon Petroleum here in the state of Alaska. It's an honor to spend a little time with you, Mr. Chairman, and the honorable members of the Senate Finance Committee. I'm pleased to share our overwhelming support for Senate Bill 240, which will ratify the three-year contract between the state of Alaska and Marathon Petroleum. The availability, the flexibility, and the stability that this contract offers that you just heard from Mr. Meza will absolutely have a positive impact on our ability to optimize our ongoing operations at the Kenai Refinery. I think you're all aware, but Marathon is a leading integrated downstream energy company. We operate the nation's largest refining system. We have a sister company, MPLX. That's our midstream company that owns and operates gathering, processing, and other assets around the nation here in the state of Alaska. And just for context, just as a reminder for everybody, you know, Marathon merged with Endeavor, formerly Tesoro, in October of 2018. So while the names have changed a little bit, you know, we're still the great Alaskans that have been operating the Kenai Refinery since 1969. You know, we're one of Alaska's longest in-state manufacturers, and we're proud to produce, you know, quality transportation fuels for Alaska. You know, today, after many improvements, that Kenai Refinery can produce about 868,000 barrels per calendar day. And our primary focus is on jet and diesel production, followed by gasoline, heavy fuel oils, propane, and asphalt. And, you know, we're one of the primary providers of jet fuel, certainly that helps support Ted Stevens International, and gasoline that helps support our communities, you know, literally that move Alaska from Nikiski to North Pole. You know, we have terminals both in Nikiski, the port of Anchorage, and up in North Pole. That's how we move those products to our communities. So we talked a little bit about jobs. You know, in addition to being one of the largest taxpayers on the Kenai Peninsula borough, you know, we do provide approximately 250 family wage jobs at the refinery, along with about 50 full-time contractors that are working in and around the refinery year-round. We also employ an additional 37 Alaskan operators who work at our terminals, like I said, in Nikiski, the Port of Anchorage, and North Pole. I'm proud to report as well that our Alaska hire is 100% for our full-time employees. We're proud of that. And I'll say, much like our sister refineries, these are Alaskans that have been working at this refinery and assets for many, many years. And oftentimes, there's multiple families that are working as well. So it's their grandfather worked there, their father worked there, now their daughter is working there, or son is working there. And so we really see that multi-generational impact as an economic driver in these different communities. And I know that Doug and ourselves, we're all proud of that fact. So I did provide a letter for the committee, so I won't read all of that, but I will say, you know, this legislation that's before you, it really is the result of constructive dialogue and productive negotiations between the Department of Natural Resources, you know, the Division of Oil and Gas, and Marathon. We appreciate their very professional work at all stages of the process, and confident that this contract before you will provide a positive shared value to all Alaskans. You know, for the state, I think Mr. Meza really underscored that in the best interest finding that it will continue to receive a price for its royalty in kind that exceeds the price it would have received if it elected to keep its royalty oil in value. For Marathon, the contract will provide us with a stable supply of Alaskan North Slope crude and also gives us that volumetric flexibility to help accommodate seasonal fluctuations and demand for refined products. So just to underscore, again, it's the availability, that flexibility, and that stability around this contract will have an absolute positive impact. So in closing, Mr. Chairman, Marathon believes in Alaska's future, and we're committed to continuing our longstanding legacy of safely and reliably producing quality fuels day in and day out for Alaskans. It's our pleasure to offer our support. We thank you for your time and attention, and for your service to our great state, and we encourage your support of passage of SB 240. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sullivan, did you listen to the earlier conversation? There was a question at the table where the other balance of your oil comes from, that I believe it's 20%.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So through the chair. is our general business practice, you know, not to discuss in specific our crude sourcing. What I can share, though, with the committee and yourself is that the large majority of crude we run is Alaska-produced crude. And, in fact, over the five-year average, Alaska crude accounted for close to 90% of all the crude that's run there in the state of Alaska. It's true that we do need a small portion of imported crude in order to optimize our production. And that slice can come from a wide variety of domestic or international markets.
So is it safe to say it's not coming from Russia right now?
That is safe to say, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Sullivan? Seeing none. Anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. All right. Any other committee discussion before we set this bill aside? Seeing none. Tomorrow, we have a 9 a.m. meeting on the agenda. It's SB 236, Facilities Constituting a School. And we have an Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority confirmation hearing, Agnes Moran. And also, I'd like to say we're at that time of the year where bills previously scheduled can be coming up on a moment's notice. And I just ask that my committee members check their computers before close of business in the afternoons. So nothing else to come before the committee. We are adjourned.